Welcome to session three of this masterclass entitled How to Use the Distraction Method to Secretly Influence the Unconscious Mind to Give You What You Want. Now, in the previous two sessions, we've been looking at ways of shifting attention in order to influence other people and even persuade them at times when there's some kind of block in their belief system or some kind of loop in their thinking. Now, today, I want to focus on personal change, which is basically the natural evolution of the first two, taking it one natural step further. Now, the reason I like focusing on personal change, and we have a lot of very interesting content in this particular session, is the same time that it's the pinnacle of the whole influence and persuasion movement, you also get to see how the mind works and how your interaction with people, your conversations, your hypnotic language, etc., makes an impact on other people. This is a very useful place in which to test and measure these things. Now, whether you're doing personal change overtly or covertly, conversationally, or a more official coaching or hypnotic context, is actually not really that important. What matters is the things you see and notice in other people as you go through using your language and, in this particular case, the distraction methods that we've been talking about in order to achieve your outcome. As you do this, you become very elegant in spotting mental patterns and patterns of influence in the things that you're doing. You're building an unconscious blueprint as to how you can elegantly influence other people. And this is really valuable, whether you are actually in the business of change, in other words, you're a coach, you're a therapist, or something similar, or whether you are just interested in hypnosis for wider purposes, sales, persuasion, to be more charismatic, to enjoy life more. Either way, it is absolutely one of the most useful things you can do is to do change work with people to notice how the mind actually works in practice. So today is exciting because we're going to focus on the same techniques that we've been looking at in the previous two sessions applied to this specific context. Now, looking back on the things we've covered in the first two sessions, there are essentially two points that you need to keep in your consciousness, in your mind at any point. And that is that when we look at the distraction method, we're using the shifting of attention to basically do two things. One, it allows the unconscious mind to process information. In other words, it allows an unhindered unconscious processing to occur. The second thing that happens, or the second thing that we are trying to foster, is that the conscious attention, where you put the conscious mind's focus on, will stimulate some kind of unconscious activity of its own. And we are asking the questions of ourselves constantly, what does the conscious mind of this individual have to focus on in order for us to stimulate some kind of resource state from occurring? Okay, so the two things that we are aiming to do is to allow the unconscious mind freedom to process things naturally, and for the conscious mind to be directed towards a point of focus which will stimulate some kind of resource which will help that process. Which, of course, is particularly important when we are talking about personal change, because now the idea of getting resources and changes are going to be quite crucial to the whole change work process. So, as we're focusing on personal change, you'll begin to notice as you do this with other people that this is simultaneously the easiest and the hardest thing to do with people, regardless of whether you're doing it overtly or covertly. Now, it's easy because really you can start off being much more overt, and doing things overtly tend to be easier in the sense that you get used to the mechanics and the processes without having the added stress or the added thought being put into how to not get noticed, how to get the unconscious mind to not pay attention to what you're doing. But it's harder because very often people like to hang on to their negative states, the loops they run themselves through, because they're so used to it. It's almost like they've worn a groove inside their mind and they don't quite like leaving that groove. Having said that, you can still do these patterns and get tremendous changes. And it's actually a very useful process to go through to see how that happens, how people get themselves stuck, how they keep themselves stuck, because as you try and shift them from things, they'll do things to get back into that rut. And then how to lead them out of that rut so that it can be filled up and really hidden forever. The basic principles that you'll be employing in personal change in order to do this is very simply, you shift their attention in order to get some kind of a new state. Now, initially, especially when we're talking about getting someone out of a rut, in other words, the same kind of loop which they're doing over and over again, it doesn't really matter what that new state is, as long as it's different. Because any path that they walk, other than the path that they habitually are walking, is a new path, and it gives the opportunity to branch off in new and better directions. So initially, you don't even care about what the new state is all that much. You just care about that it's different, that you're introducing some element of change, and that the problem can never quite go back to what it used to be before. Now, ultimately, you are sorting for a resource state. In other words, you are constantly throwing stimulation at the mind, you're constantly refocusing the attention to get new states. Now, as you're doing this, you'll begin to notice them going into resource states when they're focusing on particular things. Those are the things that you want to take note of. And if you can catch them at the right time, also to set a trigger for you to be able to use later. But the basic idea, the core principle that we'll be exploring today, and this shouldn't be any surprise given the first two sessions that we've been looking at, is you will shift attention in order to get some kind of a new state, ideally then a resource state. The other thing to look for, as well as looking for what point of focus is activating an unconscious resource state, is to look for what is their conscious mind fixated on? What are they consciously fixating on, which you must shift their attention away from in order to get that rut cleared again? Basically, the pattern is if they are fixated on X, you must shift their attention to not X. In other words, anything but X. So as long as they're not thinking of X, whatever else it is better than that because you're not reinforcing the old pattern anymore. You're starting a new one. Again, it goes back to this idea. It doesn't matter what the new state is, provided that it's different from what they were doing before. Now, the key to bringing their conscious attention to not X, in other words, distract them away from the point of fixation, is that then it frees you up to go through the back door and bring the unconscious attention back to that X, the thing that we're fixating on, and allow it to reprocess it, to run an unconscious process on that element, that X situation, so that when they come back to it consciously, they can never get back to it in quite the same way they were doing before. This is where you're using the unconscious mind's ability to generate new possibilities. And this way makes for really elegant change when you get used to it. Now, like most things, initially when you start doing it at first, it begins to be a little bit awkward and you're trying to, think of 100 little things at the same time. But always come back to the basic point. No matter how complicated things get, and I'm going to be looking at quite a sophisticated and involved process in this session, ultimately, you're always coming back to the same very basic idea. You want to shift their attention to get some kind of a new state, ideally a resource state, and to take their attention, their conscious attention, away from X, which they're fixated on. Does that, as a basic concept, make sense to everyone so far? It's not necessarily an actual step-by-step process to follow yet, just as a process. Can you follow on from the stuff we've been doing in the previous sessions and the stuff that you've done in your own experiences or in your own trainings? Can you follow on how that is a simple yet fundamental principle that we're going to be focusing on? Okay. So let's take this basic principle then and then see if we can put it into some kind of basic change work pattern. This is not necessarily the pattern that I'm going to recommend that you use, although you will ultimately, once you've gone through the more sophisticated pattern, probably come back to this more basic formulation of it because it's cleaner in the sense of where your conscious attention can rest, whilst the unconscious mind does all the more sophisticated elements that we'll be looking at in a moment's time. So the basic pattern for using the distraction method for change is basically a problem comes up. You distract them from that problem. you refocus their attention anywhere but that problem, and then you encourage the unconscious mind to find some kind of resource or to reprocess the problem scenario outside of conscious awareness to allow the problem to resolve. Usually, the resource is the trigger to get the unconscious mind to do that. Okay? So it's a very simple four-step process. Find the problem, distract attention, refocus it anywhere but where the problem was, and then allow the unconscious mind to find a resource. Finally, you collapse the two. You collapse the resource into the problem. So it kind of, it's almost like imagine someone with a big bucket of water just washing away the problem, just washing away whatever was there. Now, this leads us to a couple of things that we must examine. The first thing, of course, is, as we already mentioned in the second session, is this idea of natural change occurs in cycles. There's a lot of talk in hypnosis and in particularly the NLP world about, going for the jugular, having instant changes, having these magnificent, earth-shattering, instant, total personality shifts. And there's a lot of value in that. There is value for making big shifts quickly. And I want you to realize that, first of all, it doesn't have to always be that way. And second of all, sometimes it's advantageous not to do that. It really depends on the context and the situation. Ultimately, whether or not you go for the jugular, whether you're going to not go for the big change immediately, doesn't matter, because if you go for the big change and don't get it, it basically is telling you there's a different way, a different set of cycles you can go through to get the result you want. And even if you get a big change quickly, you will still need to go through certain cycles that we'll be looking at today, particularly to reinforce those changes to prevent a relapse. And this is something that I think happens to a lot of novice hypnotherapists and a lot of people who have just been exposed to a little bit of things like NLP, etc. They make the change and go, "Great, I've got the change," and they leave it. And the person comes back 2 weeks later and say, "Yeah, it was great for like a week or so, but then, I don't know what happened, but I just like started smoking again, or started having the problem again, or started feeling bad again, and it didn't work." And I can tell you this from personal experience, it is very annoying when that happens. To prevent that from happening, you have to understand how natural change occurs. And it typically happens in cycles. You make little shifts, shifts that you're probably not even consciously aware of, until enough of those shifts have occurred that it just pulls the whole thing along with it, and you just think differently, you just are different. If, as you're doing these natural change cycles, these iterative processes, the problem just pops, fantastic, feel good. And if not, you just go right back to the beginning and redo the process. The same steps that we're going to be discussing, the same basic patterns of problem, distract, refocus, find resource, and collapse. Though that basic cycle is a cycle you'll be going through over and over and over again to basically rewire the brain away from the rut that they kept running in and into new and greater solutions.
Hey John, can I ask you a question now?
Sure.
I actually agree with you about relapse, but I wonder about, does the same apply to shifting problems? The classic one would be, I don't know, smoking to drinking or to eating.
So you mean if you stop someone smoking and then they end up drinking more as a result, is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah. That's a crude example. It wasn't one I really had in mind, but yes.
Okay. Well, actually, that's a very good point, and that actually leads me on to the next thing I want to talk about in a second. But to answer it briefly, what you've just described is a problem with ecology, and this is typically what happens when someone comes to you and they define the goal while still in the problem state. Remember, we talked about dirty goals in the first session. A dirty goal is one where the energy that motivates it, the state that motivates it, is a negative state. So they're making bad decisions and they're choosing outcomes they think will solve the problem but won't necessarily do so. So if someone comes to you and says, "I want to stop smoking," and you leave the goal, say, for example, I want to be feeling, fine in parties and I don't know, not smoking in parties, but you leave that as a dirty goal when you're done, What ends up happening is if they are choosing alternative behavior, say their alternative behavior to smoking is to take three deep breaths. If they've chosen that behavior consciously whilst in the negative state, there may well be an ecology issue there. Hence, if there's an ecology issue like secondary gain, the unconscious mind then turns around and says, right, well, let's find a different behavior to satisfy the unmet need. Now, this is where it starts getting interesting. If you're looking in terms of state and unmet needs, because that's of course what creates dirty goals, if you don't look for clean goals, then you have, as a resource state, almost you go towards what I might call a super state. The super state is a resource state which basically precludes any kind of dirty goal. It basically goes straight to the unmet need, meets that need, so that the person becomes whole again. When that person is whole again, there is no longer an ecology issue, there's no longer a secondary gain issue, because that's been taken care of. Just how you do that is exactly what we will be focusing on today. It's actually one of the crucial elements that we're looking at. Does that kind of temporarily answer your question there, David?
For the moment, I think perhaps the example I gave you, I kind of didn't help the answer with it. But yeah, for now it does.
Okay, well, let's put it this way. If we haven't answered the question you have somewhere in the back of your mind completely by the end of this session, bring it back and I will definitely deal with it. Okay? For the moment, let's just take it from where we are. And again, feel free to jump in if a new idea or something comes to you that clarifies or solves a problem or actually makes you think, actually, no, I need to look at this now. Now, in the meantime, let's look at two points of focus that these questions, including the one that you just raised there, David, bring us towards. The first point of focus is how do you use distraction for personal change? The second then is how do we cement in those changes and prevent the very relapses that we've just been talking about? Okay, these are the two points of focus that I want to be really looking at today. And when we look at the more sophisticated method for personal change, for using the distraction method in personal change, remember, we're still talking about the same basic pattern of problem, distract, refocus to another point, get a resource state, and then collapse the two. We're still talking about that, but we're now expanding the context to basically prevent relapses and use their attention so that it would go towards clean goals versus dirty goals. So this is where we're aiming to head towards. So where does it leave us now in terms of a change pattern? We have a problem set that occurs. We've got the distraction. When we're reorienting towards some kind of resource, which is the bit that happens just after the distraction, there's many different ways we can look at this. We've looked in session one at different distraction methods and how they're tied into resources. And very often, all that you're looking for is to stimulate the mind to do anything different. And notice what comes back spontaneously, because often the spontaneous shifts, the spontaneous resources are the ones that are particularly useful. You can do this covertly. I, however, would recommend that you spend the initial times of your training doing it very overtly, with people's permission, with people knowing, yes, I'm going to work on this specific problem, almost like a coaching context or therapeutic context, because of the freedom it gives you as a hypnotist to slow things down and experiment with different ideas and go in different directions. Because when you're reorienting towards a resource, you can, while still just randomly throwing pebbles at seeing what you can stimulate, you can actually hunt a specific resource. You can look for different things. And you have to think, in order to hunt a resource, you have to think about what kind of questions can you ask, which presuppose certain answers, which presuppose certain results. One of the questions, for example, is how do you want to be different? Notice what that presupposes. It actually takes the attention away from the problem. It also takes it towards something more positive. Whatever that is, will typically be a resource. Of course, some people, when you say how they want to be different, will go back to telling you what they don't want to be. And then, of course, you've got to take them back out of what they don't want and find out what they do want, how they actually want to be different, and get a description. There's another very interesting question, which we'll be exploring a little bit more fully in a moment, and that is how would you be if you no longer had this problem? And this question will be quite an important one because it takes care of the problems behind secondary gain, behind dirty goals, behind that unmet need. It actually goes towards how will you be when the unmet need has been met. That's really what you're asking, but in a way that most people will understand in a more colloquial, everyday sort of way. So when you're reorienting towards the resource, it doesn't really matter which direction you go in, but as you begin to refine your skill and you begin to get more skillful at hunting a specific resource, start thinking in terms of what questions can I ask, what directions can I lead their mind to focus it towards something which will be particularly useful for the change work we're about to do. Now let's say you found the resource. You set a trigger with it, right? Once you set a trigger for the resource, you reintroduce the original problem, the trigger for the original problem, so that the resource, like the bucket of water, just washes over the old problem and just melts it away, cleans up the whole thing. At that point, you go through reiteration cycles. You go through cycles to either embed the change or to clean up the next layer. Think of it this way. Sometimes what will happen is when you throw the bucket of water over the dirty floor, it'll wash away a whole bunch of dirt, but other dirt will still be there. So you have to throw another bucket and another bucket and another bucket. These are all natural cycles. Each time the floor gets a little bit cleaner, and each time you have to go back, refill the bucket, and come back again. That's the same cycle occurring essentially. So just because the first bucket of water hasn't cleaned your floor, don't lose heart. It's actually quite a natural thing. So we've now taken the basic change pattern and we've begun to refine it a little bit in terms of thinking strategically. Does that kind of make sense why we're doing these different things now and how they fit in with the change formula that we've been talking about so far? We're beginning to develop this now on a very step-by-step process. Everyone clear so far?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's now look back on this idea of dirty goals and relapses and problems happening along the way. Because something that you'll notice very quickly when you start doing change work with people is that unless you have a natural talent for this already and are unconsciously doing certain things, there comes the following situation will arise reasonably frequently at the beginning whilst you are still getting to grips with what you're doing. Don't concern yourself if it does. It's a natural part. And here's a solution for it as well. You work with someone. You make a tremendous shift. Maybe they came in, you know, feeling demotivated, didn't want to do their taxes or afraid of their boss or whatever the problem is. And you do some kind of change work. You run through some cycles. You could use distraction method. You could use anything that you're aware of, any skill that you have. You make the change. And they go, fantastic, I feel great. I'm going to go home, do my taxes now. I'm going to confront my boss. I'm going to do this. Everything seems to be fine. Then they go home. 1 week later, they come back. You ask them how they're doing. And they go, oh, actually didn't work. And I was really motivated. I was really fired up. But then the next day I woke up and I don't know, it wasn't the same anymore. It just didn't feel right. In other words, the problem came back somehow. How could that be? Well, there's two possible things that are happening there. The first one is typically known as a sequential incongruity or some kind of ecology problem. Think of this in terms of a parts conflict. You have one part that you may have let's just take a step back in terms of parts. When I talk about having a parts conflict, imagine you're a person who smokes but hates the fact that they're smoking. So it's kind of strange that you're doing something but hate yourself for doing it. It's almost like there's two parts inside you, two like a split in your nervous system, one part that wants to smoke and is maintaining the habit, and the other part that wants to stop it but for some reason can't influence the behavior. So kind of you can conceptualize the neurology or the mind in that way, that sometimes elements of the mind split off and form a little bit of independence and do their thing. And that can be a problem if it then conflicts with other parts that have a conflicting program or conflicting need or desire. And one of the things that you do in change work is trying to recombine the two so that they can influence each other, let go of the negative behavior, and still meet the unmet need. Because the smoking isn't about smoking, it's about meeting some kind of unmet need, of course. This is what we call ecology. Now, if you have an ecology problem, it's basically the consequence of a dirty goal. You have an unmet need, and whatever solutions you've come up with are still not meeting that need. Now, just because I'm saying it's a dirty goal, or that is it, that having an ecology problem is will lead later on to a likely relapse, does not mean that this is not necessarily that this is a bad place to start with. Sometimes you absolutely want to start with a dirty goal to get some movement, get some shift, to get a convincing change in the moment. But then in the back of your mind, you must be aware, I have now created a shift within a context of a dirty goal. So I still have some ecology stuff to clean up. So just don't end where you've begun. Just don't think because you've got a clear change in front of you, if you haven't dealt with the ecology side of things, that you have finished yet. And we'll have a look at how to deal with the ecology things in a moment. Does everyone understand what I mean by this parts conflicts and the ecology check, or the ecology problem with ecology because of a dirty goal?
Yep.
Okay. So the second reason why they might be okay in the office in front of you and then later on have a relapse is very simply because your solution was too unrooted. It wasn't rooted enough. It was too lightly ingrained. If you think of it this way, someone's been digging a hole for 10 years, every day's been digging that hole for an hour each day, and then you come back and you throw in a little bit of dirt, that hole hasn't been filled. Or if you dig another hole right next to it, a better hole in a different direction, but you only spend a couple of minutes digging that hole, it's going to be nowhere near as deep as the other one. So when push comes to shove, it's easier to find the wider hole, because it's easier for the analogy to go there than the smaller one. This is what I mean by something being too lightly ingrained. It just hasn't been conditioned enough. Now, the conditions that basically root or cement things in are very simple. Number one, it's classical conditioning. It's basically repetition, association, until there's a stimulus response. You know, X leads to Y every time. Typically, you do not want to have a conscious involvement. You want to bypass the conscious involvement because you want the responses to happen unconsciously. In terms of the problem construct, that's exactly why they have a problem. They don't choose to feel bad about something. They don't choose smokers who want to stop smoking but still keep doing it, don't choose to light the cigarette. They just find halfway through having smoked it that it's in their hand and they go, I can't even remember having lit it. People who keep falling off diets, they don't choose to eat that chocolate cake. It's just like before they know it, they're doing it already, or they can't resist it. In other words, they know they don't want to do it, sometimes even whilst they're doing it, but they can't resist it because there's something going on outside of their conscious awareness. So if there's no conscious involvement in the problem, you've got to make sure there's no conscious involvement in the solution, because consciousness obviously hasn't got the, if like, the tools to cope with the situation. In other words, you want to condition something, you want to bypass the conscious involvement to automate something. And typically, you want to have a sense of generalization. In the same way as you've learned when you were young what a door is, and once you saw enough doors and how they worked, you pretty much figured out that any door you come across, you'll know how to open it, because they all work in pretty much the same way. This is how people create problems. They have one little situation in which something happens, and over time, that situation grows and grows and grows until they can't deal with a whole bunch of situations that are similar. Here's an example of how a phobia occurs. Little child walking down the street, next door neighbor's dog is angry, barks at them, little child gets scared. So now the little child starts getting more and more afraid of this one dog. So he gets afraid of the street that the dog's on. As he's walking past the house, he starts thinking about it, gets more and more afraid. But then something interesting can happen, which is he doesn't just think this one particular dog is frightening. Suddenly he starts hearing other dogs bark, and it reminds him of the first one. So now dogs barking makes him frightened. Then he sees other dogs, which triggers the memory of the first dog, and of course that makes him frightened as well. So pretty soon the fear generalizes away from the one specific dog to all dogs, and then they have a classic phobia. So just in the way that people create problems by conditioning, through repetition and through association, through bypassing the conscious involvement and through generalizing things, so your solution will be more cemented, more rooted when you condition it, when you repeat it, when you bypass the conscious involvement, and when you generalize it. Okay? So those are two reasons why people might have a relapse. It's the ecology issue, and it's the lack of ingraining or the lack of having cemented the roots in properly. Do those two things make sense so far? Okay, so now let's look at some of the ways that we might want to solve this. The first thing to do, let's have a look at the ecology problem. How does the ecology problem arise? Well, remember, the ecology problem arises because someone is in a negative state and is making choices about the future from that negative state. They are creating an ego-based goal. In other words, it's driven by an unmet need, and typically the goal has the same unmet need built into it because that was the state that generated the quote-unquote solution. Okay? So when someone comes to you and says, "I want to go to the gym more often," they may well be doing wanting to do that, and that might be it may be as simple as doing that. But if there is an unmet need there, chances are that they will keep faltering going to the gym because the behavior is, if you like, reinforcing whatever the unmet need underlying it is. So the more they try and force themselves to the gym to go to the gym, the more the unmet need grows, and then the less likely it is they'll persist. So how can you solve this? Well, one of the ways to do that is to not choose the behaviors consciously. Don't let them consciously choose the behaviors, because the conscious mind isn't capable of choosing those behaviors, at least not until you've got a clean goal in place. But he can't choose the clean goal because the individual will probably still be in the grips of the negative state, of the dirty goal, the unwanted, unmet need. So you need to create the context to allow the unconscious mind to choose behaviors, ideally to choose many different behaviors. 7 to 9 should be a minimum. In other words, enough so that the conscious mind can't keep track of them, and then use those as the unconscious blueprint for resolving the problem. You don't want the conscious mind involved because, remember, if the conscious mind is fixating on a particular form of an outcome or something, all it'll do is it'll take your formulation and it'll fixate on that in the same way. In other words, it'll bring the same energy it had on the original dirty goal into the new behavior, the new goal, and it will end up contaminating it, because that's how it's contaminated the first goal in the first place. It's not the goal that was bad in the first place. It's the emotional energy that they brought to the goal which contaminated it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So, how do we do this then? Well, first of all, we need to get them to choose the new behaviors and new goals, outcomes, unconsciously. When I say unconsciously, the simplest way to do this is, in layman's terms, use the word spontaneously. Anything that's spontaneous is, by definition, unconscious. So, when we talk about making unconscious changes, we can use them. We're basically talking about spontaneous changes. But we don't just want to have spontaneous changes in any context. It has to be in the context of a resource state, because remember, the state is what either cleans or contaminates the goal in the first place. So we have two tasks to perform. Number one, to change state to a resource state. Of course, that's what the whole change pattern is about. Number two is to get the unconscious mind to choose alternative behaviors which will feed into whatever the outcome or goal that they were looking for happens to be. Ideally, to do that outside of consciousness, to avoid an ecology problem by contaminating the goal. And then we'll go through conditioning cycles to make sure that that is nicely and deeply rooted in, whilst being, of course, outside of conscious awareness. Once you've done enough conditioning cycles, the unconscious mind will tend to generalize a pattern. Hey, presto, you have now done an elegant piece of change work, which, although initially might have been a very overt thing, over time you get to be very, very covert, very, very indirect and discreet about this. Now, if we're talking about the R state, the resource state, there's another state that we might want to address, something I'd like to call the super state, because there's something very, very powerful about a particular kind of resource state which actually takes care of a whole bunch of things automatically. What is this super resource state? Well, imagine this. Think about it in terms of the things that are missing from the other person, the unmet need. The unmet need basically is saying that there's something that they need, there's something that they value in life, but they're not getting. So if you find what their highest value is in terms of the context of the change they're trying to make, and you meet that value, that criteria, that need, well, then by definition, you bypass any ecology issues because you've basically gone to a logical level beyond which the problem can actually exist. And this is why the questions, how will you be when you no longer have the problem, is such a powerful question when asked at the right time, of course. It's a powerful question because you're basically asking, how will you be when you no longer have an unmet need? In other words, when the unmet need that you're not consciously aware of has been met, how will you be? When they answer that question properly and you find the state that's behind it, that state will drive an immense amount of very elegant changes because there is no more ecology issues. That's been taken care of now. Do you see how that, finding this super state as the actual resource state, is a very elegant way of bypassing the whole ecology problem, which will tend to create relapses?
Yeah, Igor, how would you recognize what the state was?
Very good question. Initially, what I recommend you do is don't concern yourself too much with this super state, if you like. It's enough to have a resource state that's good enough to make changes. I say this just because I don't want you to overload as you're getting used to this pattern in the first place. Now, in terms of where you lead on from once you get used to the basic version of this change pattern, so you can come back to these recordings time and time again and pull more layers out, how will you recognize when you have it? Well, it's simple. When they can congruently answer the question, how will you be when you no longer have this problem or the old problem, and you see them going into the state as they describe it, then that's it. If they're just describing something but they don't go into the state, then that's not it, or there's something else inhibiting the process, so you haven't quite got it, right? If they're in a positive state but they haven't answered that question, or they can't yet really answer that question, then that's probably not it either. That's just a good resource state and very useful for making changes, and quite possibly enough all by itself. But you may want to dig a little deeper to be able to answer that question later. And the ideal time to be asking that question is once you've either distracted away from the problem and have a small resource. So basically, you've opened the window to other possibilities, maybe a little bit of a trance of infinite possibilities. And then you get them to contemplate, what would it be like if I didn't have this problem? How would I be as a person? How would I feel? Then, as they answer that, as they focus in that direction, when we're talking about shifting of attention, the unconscious mind will at some point bring to consciousness, if you like, the situation of here is what it's like to have the unmet need met. And as they describe that and begin to feel that, and you can see that happening, you go, excellent, I've got it now. You set a trigger so that you can use it later. And when you recognize that coming back, or whenever you need to, you just fire the trigger off again. And that is a very elegant way of just bypassing a whole bunch of possible problems. Does that answer your question, Sean?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
So we've taken care of now the first problem, which is the ecology problem. What was the second problem we looked at? Well, it's a lack of roots. If you haven't ingrained a change enough, in other words, if the problem behavior, the problem states are better conditioned, if they're more rooted than your solution, well, in times of pressure, you go back to the things you know best. So you want to make the solution at least as rooted, at least as easy to get to, if not easier to get to, more deeply rooted than the original problem was. Now, the original problem, of course, was created often over a number of years, and you don't want to be sitting there over a number of years doing slow building of cycles, etc. The beauty, though, is that just as the original problem was built up or rooted in over a number of years, the original pattern that allowed it to root was typically a one-off event that then began to grow as they cycled through it. Now, we're going to take the principle of fractionation, which is a very fundamental principle in hypnosis, Fractionation basically is whenever you do a hypnotic induction and you take them out of hypnosis and go back in and go back out and go back in, every time they go back into hypnosis, people will tend to go in a little bit more quickly, a little bit more easily, and a little bit deeper. So the same thing is true of, I think, most processes people go through. If you cycle through change processes, if you cycle through the same change process over and over again, you are actually fractionating the change in many ways. As you fractionate the change, you are conditioning it. You're basically repeating the cycle until it begins to ingrain. But, and here's one of the key things, if you repeat the cycle within the same context all the time, the danger you're running is that it'll contextualize, it'll be stuck in that one context. And then there'll be lots of, like, a dozen or 100 different contexts in which they don't have the solution. And if that's the case, then often what happens is they'll backwards generalize again. In other words, I have a problem in all these situations, therefore I can't have solved the problem, so I guess I'll probably feel bad in the context I've already changed as well. And then they basically undo the good work you've already done. Okay? So how do you solve this? Any ideas?
Do you actually do it by distracting them?
Distraction will be part of it, absolutely. And what else would you think you might want to add into your conditioning cycles to make sure that it doesn't get limited to a context?
Well, not giving it a context.
To be more specific, give it lots of context. So what you're looking to do is select as many different contexts, past and future, in which the problem might have arisen or would have arisen in the past, and then condition the changes, the resource state or the super state, to those things, and then get them to spontaneously describe new behaviors in those contexts whilst they're in the state. So do you see already there's quite a few steps going on here? In other words, they go to a context, they bring their resource with them, which basically means now they're feeling different in the context, so that's blowing out the old problem. But that may not be enough. If they don't have any idea, if it's too abstract, they might just feel good in the context, but if they haven't wired in specific behaviors, there's no muscle memory about what to do, what to say, well then they may well fall back to the problem. So when they're feeling like that, you then ask them questions like, what do you think you want to do now? How do you want to behave? How do you feel spontaneously that you would react in this situation? At that point, they are now becoming more concrete in the situation, which create a more deeply rooted pathway, a more realistic situation. And that's one context. Then you go to another context and do the same thing again. And you go to another context and do the same thing again. And another one, and another one, and another one. Now, your job as an agent of change here, as a coach or a therapist or however you want to perceive yourself, is to exhaust the context. In other words, to keep asking them to jump to a new context and do the same thing over and over and over again. Feel good, change behavior. Feel good, find new behavior. Feel good, spontaneously new behavior. Feel good, spontaneously act different. Do that over and over and over again, at least 7 times, so that they can't keep track of it. Remember, the conscious mind is limited to 5 to 9 bits of information. At least 7 or 9 different contexts, but ideally you want to keep going until they literally cannot think of any more context. They cannot think of any more times in which the problem can arise. Okay? Now, sometimes different things will happen. Sometimes their conscious mind just goes, wow, I can't think of any more problems, and they'll go, fantastic, I feel great now. At other times, what will happen is their conscious mind will overload, and this is a great thing to happen. Remember, what were the 3 conditions for rooting change? It was to condition something. It was to bypass the consciousness. Now there's no conscious involvement. It is to generalize. If their conscious mind starts getting overloaded, that's perfect. All the solutions, all the resource states that are attached to the new context from that point cannot have conscious interference because the mind's already overloaded. So when their conscious mind begins to overload, it's an ideal time to take them to a trance of infinite possibilities and begin to generalize using hypnotic language patterns to more and more context. And this begins to mushroom out into more and more situations. And now the unconscious mind begins to take over the very process you were doing, so that it starts to generalize. So now you have all three. You have lots of conditioning cycles, you have lack of conscious involvement, and you have generalization taking place. So do you see how repeating the cycle, the reiterations, if you like, testing it in lots of different contexts, past and future, first the past and the future, until they start to exhaust problem context, gives you the perfect situation, the perfect context to rewire the brain as deeply with a solution as the problem used to be wired in. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. So, now, everything we've talked about now has been reasonably theoretical, reasonably abstract. I hope that it begins to tie in with many different things that you've been doing in your own practice of hypnosis, in your own interaction with people. But I want to basically take all these ideas, these principles, and then drill them down into practical step-by-step process, the, if you like, distraction method for change. Now, this is going to be quite an involved little process I'm going to describe. And remember, please, only ever go as far as the simplicity that you can keep in your mind. The core pattern is very simply you have a problem state, you distract from the problem state, you reorientate to some kind of resource, you reintroduce the problem trigger so that the resource can wash over it, and you reiterate the process to create roots and keep cleaning things up. That's the core piece of the process. But now we want to look at it in terms of real life, because when you listen back to session two, you'll notice from Sean's very elegant example of using covert persuasion patterns, conversations are quite messy. When talking to people outside of a rigid context, which is what you really want to do with elegant change work, things can get quite messy. And a lot of people get put off going, well, the technique can't work because I don't have a place to put it. You absolutely do have places to put it. You just have to find within the natural context of a conversation, with a natural way that people tend to respond to you, the places in which you make these changes.